Today on The Grave Talks, Connections with the Dead, a conversation with Andy Moore. When Andy Moore was a young child, he quickly recognized that he could see and hear people's spirits who had passed away to the other side. What made this so difficult to grasp was that his family and friends could not. After years of trying to block out this ability, he embraced it and has discovered the positive difference it could bring to the lives of strangers. Today, we discuss his journey and the unique skills he lives with every day on The Grave Talks.
There's two major things that happened to me. The first one was when I was really young. I was probably about 6 years old. And I lived with my parents just outside of Birmingham, about 6 miles away, which would be the second biggest city in England. And it was an old 1930s house, and the land was all mining land, a very ancient land where it was built on. It's actually built on a main road. And I always remember being in my bedroom, and I could hear my mum and dad downstairs watching the TV. My mum was doing the ironing, and at the corner of my eye, there were two figures, both wearing top hats, standing looking at me, which was really, really strange for me. As I adjust my gaze to look at them properly, I could see them fully, as though I was just looking at an actual solid person. They didn't say a word to me. They just kept looking and looking and looking. Then I heard my mum walking up the stairs. She was bringing the ironing up that she'd done, and they just faded. So that kind of freaked me out a little bit, being at that age. That happened, I'd say, once a week for about 12 months. And then I started, as we were walking around town and walking around places, and I'd see really old people in really, to me, really strange costumes. And I'd point them out to my parents and say, why are they dressed like that? There's nobody there. But I could see them, and they would smile at me, or they would wave, and all those kind of things. Some were just what we describe as residual energy. Some were actual spirit energy. Then I started being able to communicate. And very strangely, it felt like I've got a TV actually inside my head. I know that sounds weird and way out, but that's the only way to describe it at that age. Then I kept it really quiet. I didn't want to tell anyone because nobody would believe me. So I kept it quiet, and then I went through my teenage years, and you get up to all kinds of stuff in your teenage years, and you don't want to be talking to dead people and all that kind of thing because it is not cool. You want to try and fit in. And then I got a job. My job was a lifeguard for one of the swimming pools, and I was working there for a few months, and a full-time job came up at a 1930s Art Deco swimming pool. I applied for the job. The night before the interview, I had this really vivid dream, and looking back now, I don't think it was a dream, where a little girl came running up to me in my bedroom and said, "You're coming to help me." And I was like, "Oh, okay." Woke up, took no notice, went for the interview. When I got to the swimming pool, like I say, it was very ornate, very Art Deco. I walked in, and there's two sets of stairs, like two grand staircases. The manager's office where I needed to go to the interview was one of the stairways. I stood at the bottom of the stairs waiting to get up and composing myself, ready to go. And at the top of the stairs was the little girl. And that kind of freaked me out before an interview. I walked up the stairs. Luckily, I got the job. I managed to compose myself enough. I started there the very next day. And I've seen that little girl every day at work for the last 33 years. So that kind of got me, propelled me into it, developed my mediumship. And all the other aspects of spirituality that I deal with. So, yeah, it's a strange story, but that's how I saw it, and that's how it happened to me.
Sure. And I want to unpack some of those things that you just talked about. When you were talking about you were a kid, you were walking around, and you would see people dressed in what looked like old costumes and such, and some were just residual, kind of going about their business, but some did look down at you and smile as if they could see you. Is there something, and this is just an opinion-based question based on your experiences, but do you believe that the spirits on the other side that are conscious, that are, you know, there, that they can tell which humans, which living humans can and cannot sense them?
Absolutely, yes. But I think there's two parts to that as well. I think they can actually sense the people who, the vibration of people that can possibly tune in. Mm-hmm. But I also believe that everybody can tune in, that, you know, there's no difference between me and anyone else. I think we've all got the possibility of doing it. We can all do it. It's just that some people don't want to, or they don't want to pursue that kind of life, or mm-hmm. they're just too scared. So I do believe that our friends, our relatives that have passed do come back and speak to everyone and try and leave as many signs and as much detail as they can, just to let you know that they're okay. It's just some people just don't want to tune into that possibility. And that's absolutely fine, in my opinion. But I wouldn't say that I'm any more special or gifted than anyone else in that ability. It's just opening your mind to it.
Mm-hmm. When you saw them and they looked down at you like, hey, they see this little boy that can sense them. What are they doing? Are they, you know, that's an interesting thought of, are they just going about their day just as we would on this side? What did you notice? What did you see? Like what sort of, you know, actions were you seeing being performed as you had these experiences?
Well, I've seen that with the residual things, it's just like people walking, sure, or pushing a pram or that kind of stuff, you know, everyday things. It's almost like going back in time for a split second. Mm-hmm. But seeing life as it was then in the 1970s for me, mm-hmm. and then seeing a little aspect of, like, say, the 1800s or whatever time frame, it's that little glimpse, and it was almost a couple of seconds and it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
With the other spirits who would interact with me, I would kind of like try and talk to them in my head, and I'd hear a voice back. And then I would say to my parents, especially my mom, you know, I've got this gentleman here and he's saying this to me. And normally it was a member of the family that had come through that I had no idea who. I was only young. And it was like my mom's uncle and my mom's grandmother, and I described them perfectly and what they were saying and what related to my parents at that point, what they knew of those people.
When did you realize that you were the only one who was seeing them and your friends, your family were not?
That was pretty early age. I was almost... is as strange as it sounds, I was almost older than my time, if that makes sense. So I felt as though I didn't quite belong.
Sure.
That kind of changed a lot in my teenage years. You know, when you kind of rebel and you do those things that you're not supposed to do just to try and fit in with the crowd and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite young, and then I just dismissed it. And I developed a way of tuning out. So I didn't want to see. It wouldn't always work. I'd see little bits and pieces, and I'd get messages for friends and that, but I would never pass those messages on. I didn't want it to be seen as different.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was a difficult time, as teenage years are for everyone, but, yeah, it added another dimension to it, which, made it a little bit more difficult, but it was okay. Got through it, and, I'm just trying to help my children now go through it, because they're... My youngest lad is 17, and he's absolutely phenomenal in what he can pick up and what he can see. And just to give him that support and help him develop in the right way, and just say it's okay, it's acceptable, don't worry about it, you know, carry on.
when you realized that you had this ability and others, you caught this, early on, did you ever question, is there something wrong with me? Or was it right away? Like, you just kind of accepted that this is part of you. This is just kind of an ability that you have.
Oh, you question it. Yeah. But I also didn't want to question it too much. And I didn't want to make a fool of it or say too much to anyone. Mm-hmm. In case people thought I was absolutely crazy, and you end up being put in a special school or...
Yeah.
And I just wanted to be normal. And the way for me to be normal was not to say anything.
Okay.
That was my way of dealing with it.
Sure.
And I accepted it for myself. And like I say, I kind of developed a way of like blocking it out as best as I could.
Let's talk about that for a minute, about blocking it out or tuning it out. I know you had said earlier that, you just... if you got a message that was for a friend, you just wouldn't share it because, it would be weird, at that time socially to be the person coming up going, "Wait, I just got this message from the dead for you." You'd be ostracized.
Yeah.
But beyond that, how does one who has this ability tune it out? I mean, is it like flipping a switch? Is it just like ignoring it? Like sometimes you can be in a room, the television is on, and you may not have any idea what's being said on the TV, if you go back and are asked about it, 5 minutes later, because you were engrossed over here at something, but you still could kind of hear the noises. You knew the TV was on. Is that kind of like how that works?
Exactly. Yeah. I've since developed it further than that.
Okay.
But in my younger years, that was the way I kind of concentrated on something else. I read a book. I listened to a conversation. I'd do anything just to ignore it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the fact that it scared me. There was nothing that was ever presented to me that was scary, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Sure.
To me, it was quite normal. And I'd got a fascination with history anyway. So to me, to see all these strange costumes and all these weird things, it was fascinating at the same time. But you don't want it all the time.
Yeah.
You can't live like that all the time. It's a nightmare. You do something that kind of blocks it out. And that what you've just said, that analogy about the TV, is absolutely spot on. That's how I used to deal with it. Now I use visualization tools. So imagine that. Do you remember the old fashioned radios where you had to tune the dial through to get the radio station?
Yep.
That's one of my visualizations that I do to try and open up and close down. I tune in by you visualizing the dial moving up and down. And I teach quite a few visualizations for people when they're trying to tune in. And one of my group, they like painting. I do a lot of painting myself. But the way that they open up, they visualize that they're actually dipping the paintbrush mm-hmm. into the paint. And then they're open. And when they wash the brush out in the water, they're closing down. Another one puts a record on, puts the needle on the rod, and takes it off when they want to tune out. So it's all these little visualizations that help us mm-hmm. disattach from the energy. I know it sounds strange, but that's how you can adapt it to actually sort the difference out, so you know when you're open and when you're closed.
That's interesting. I mean, it makes sense when we talk about it that way. It was always one of those things that I had difficulty kind of understanding. Well, how do you completely tune it out? And it's not that it's like 100% tuned out. You know, the TV's on in the other room, but you're just not paying attention to it. But you can choose if you wanted to. You could sit there and watch the TV and then you could be engaged with it. But other than that, it's just kind of white noise off in the background.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I would say for 70% of my time going around normal everyday life, I'm tuned out. I want a normal life. I want to talk to my friends about normal things.
Sure.
I want to go to the pub and not see the dead guy standing at the bar. It's all that kind of thing. But when I want to tune in, then it's the most useful tool ever. But it also comes in the mediumship side, like I say, trying to communicate with spirit, is different from the psychic side, where the psychic side is that you can never quite get rid of the psychic side, especially when you deal with people. And you just know instinctively that there's something not quite right about that person. Or, you know, they may be a really lovely person on the outwards, but they've got like a really nasty streak in them, or they're hiding something, or and things like that. So it becomes, that's more difficult to deal with on a psychic level, you know. And part of my day job is interviewing a lot of people for jobs. And, you know, people can walk into my office and get interviewed, and it's like they've got the most fantastic resume. They answer all the questions fantastically. And I just get a feeling, no, this person is not right. And I think a lot of people do that. That's their unconscious way of tuning into people. But I'm always, I'm not trying to sound big Eddie, but 99% of the time, I'm always right when that person's been offered the job, that something happens a few weeks later where we have to let them go because of their attitude or behaviour or something that creeps in from their past. It's always like that. So the psychic side is a lot more different from the mediumship.
Are there other co-workers of yours or bosses that that know that you have this ability where it's like, we really like this person, their resume looks great, everything checks out, the references are great, but first they have to sit down with you and kind of go through your test of like, what do you think? And it's like, you know, the psychic test of is this person good enough to be working with us?
I wish that was the case, but sadly, no. With the working regulations and rules that we have in this country, you know, if you pass that interview with flying colours, you got the job. But yeah, if we could change that, I would love it. But that might be a little bit unfair.
You can't like check the box like failed the interview because of Andy's psychic test.
That's it. Yeah.
Like, nope. Sorry, this is one we got over here, and it's just not good. Let me ask you about this. You had said earlier when you go into like a bar or a pub or something, you'd like to just relax and not necessarily see the dead guy standing at the bar. And it doesn't necessarily have to be at a bar, but we were talking about the TV analogy before. TVs, they're stationary objects. They're in other rooms. You can tune them out. Do you ever have a situation where you're trying to tune one of these individuals out, one of these spirits out, because you just want to chill, and they're persistent and they don't want you to tune them out? Like, they really want you to pay attention to them, and they kind of get in your face, or, you know, so to speak, to say, no, I know you don't want to, but hey, I'm here.
I will tell you one of my most embarrassing stories relating to that. So I went to our local town. I was about, I was in my early 20s. I went to a nightclub. I got absolutely drunk. And when I'm drunk, I tune in more than ever.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm having a great time with my friends, dancing, and I need to go to the toilet. So I go to the restroom. I'm standing there doing my business. There's a guy stood next to me doing his business. And as you well know, us guys, we don't tend to make conversation between each of us standing at the urinal.
Yeah.
Anyway, this woman, this old lady, come and stood next to me as a spirit. And she says, I want you to tell him that I'm okay. So I'm going in my head, no, I can't make that conversation with this guy.
Yeah.
And coming really insistent. And I'm like, oh. In the end, I turned around to him and I said, hello, mate. Was your mom called Nora? I'm not going to say the word he actually used, but it was like, how the...
Oh, you can swear, don't worry. There's we have, yeah.
Yeah, so it was like, how the fuck did you know that? And I was like, okay. I said, did she die of throat cancer? And he was like, and by this time he's getting really angry.
Yeah.
I said, did you used to go around every Friday night and you used to take her fish and chips and you used to play cards with her and you'd always let her win at cards? And I just give all this detail, how she died, the time she died, everything that she told me to say. And she just wants to say that she's absolutely fine. I give that information and I walked out the door. The last thing that I noticed was that he was sat on the floor crying his eyes out, sat next to the urinal, and I was just like, I can't do anything more than say what I've been given, but there you go. I went back downstairs, carried on drinking, and went for a dance. Yeah.
It's like the ultimate bad mom timing, you know, right there. It's like, because moms will do that. It's like, if the one time you want to let your son know that I'm okay, I'm on the other side, let's do it when he's doing his business. We're going to go up to the guy next to him at the urinal and tell him this, and then deliver the message in the most vulnerable position you could possibly do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. I'll never forget that. Yeah, it's never happened again.
Moms still have horrible timing, even in death. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's interesting that, you know, the persistence, you know, will stay there. Have you ever had a moment where you received a message from someone? I know you said like in your teens, you kind of, you know, you're like, I'm not going to do this. But have you ever had it where someone came up to you, a spirit came to you and said, you know, I want you to tell so-and-so this. And you did not tell them that, and you look back going, I should have done that. I retrospectively wish I would have, but at the time you did not.
I think only in my teenage years, I've since learned that if somebody gives me something, I need to pass it on.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how strange the situation is, as we talk about toilets, I've done it in supermarkets, you know, all kinds of places. I've just passed the message on, and then for me, I have to forget all about it. I can't carry that kind of energy around with me.
Yeah,
especially if it's a difficult message to hear or whatever. I am quite understanding with the person. I try and put it in such a way that it is easy to receive the message rather than just like your mom says you're a failure or whatever else. Do you know what I mean?
Do you ever get that? Because, you know, you hope it's going to be like, oh, I'm proud of you, I'm on the other side and I love you. Is there ever just kind of that jaded parent that was, you know, probably a shitty parent to begin with that goes up and like, hey, let Vanessa know that she's a loser and I'm really disappointed that she had all these different kids with different people and she'll never amount to anything. Go tell her. She's standing by the lean cuisines in the freezer section.
The worst one I've had was probably a gentleman, and that was in the supermarket, and that was the point where I had to go up to him and say, your mom says that you're not looking after your children very well. He'd recently divorced and kind of just went on his merry little way and started a new life.
Yeah.
And he was that angry about that her treated by him.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, he didn't take it very well.
Yeah.
I'd give him all the evidence that he needed, but I think he needed somebody to take it out of, and that was me. But that was fine. I give what I needed to be saying. Hopefully that he looked back on that respectively and did something more positive with his attitude towards the children.
Sure. Yeah, people don't like being confronted or criticized about their parenting skills at random at the grocery store. I had a situation today. I was at the grocery store, and there was a woman who was not paying at all attention to her little toddler who was standing up on the inside of the cart in the freezing parking lot. And this kid, and the cart's kind of like wobbling a bit, and this kid could have just, you know, fell right out of it, hit its head. And she's like, you know, in the front seat, the cart's in the back of the vehicle, and I'm walking towards the store, and she's not paying any attention to it, and I'm like, I'm there and I'm watching, and she finally comes around, and I said, pay attention to your child. I said, your daughter could have fallen out of this cart. I've been standing here watching for the last 2 minutes. I've been watching her. Like, no, you haven't. You were in your car, and that's not safe where that child is. I can handle my own children. I said, clearly you can't.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, it's just one of the, it's like, I'm not there to be mean, but it's like, look, just admit it, just own up to it. Go, I was distracted. You're right. Thank you for, you know, but no, it's going to be, I'm going to be defensive and it's everyone else's fault but mine. They don't do well with facts from the living. So I can't imagine they do always the best with ones from the dead.
It nearly comes to punches, but I got out there pretty quick, but
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you had to deliver that one message to that man at the grocery store. Has there been other times where you've gone up to someone and it was, how often is it well received versus it being not well received?
I think I'm gonna be really sexist when I say this, but this is just an observation my part, right? That women receive it so much more better than men.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is. I can't tell you. I haven't got a clue. But I think they're more open to it.
Mm-hmm.
And men are more defensive. Whether that would be any different if a female medium went up to a male and told them something, whether their reaction would be different.
Mm-hmm.
But man on man, no. But normally about 90% of the time is positive, you know. And mm-hmm. I'd also get my guides would come through and say, you know, no, leave that one, walk away. We'll deal with that one another way.
Mm-hmm.
So you do get that kind of warning sometimes, you know, because you just don't know how people are going to react and what they're going to do. And so you have to be careful as well.
Tell me about the guides. Tell me how that works in relation to the messages that you get.
Okay. So my guides, I've got quite a few. I'm quite greedy when it comes to guides, but I believe guides will come in and out your life for specific reasons. They're always there. You've got your main guide who will always be with you, that's chose to be with you and will always see your life through. And then you have other guides that come in that may be able to help you with different situations that are going on with your life.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who don't recognise the fact that they've got guides or anything would suddenly have that, you know, if somebody is, I don't know, trying to fix their car up and they're totally lost on what they're doing, and then suddenly have that spark of knowledge. Where did that come from? But I know what to do now. That's usually the guide or a guide coming through to put that in there and help them.
Okay.
My guides that have helped me, I've got many different ones. My main guide is a young lady called Erin. I'm not too sure how old she is. I'd say early 20s. Looking at her, she's got flame red hair. And she comes from Ireland. She's Irish. Every time I see her, she's in what I would describe as a white nightdress.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a little silver cross around her neck. She's always been there for me. I've seen her, you know, since I was little as well. So she's my main guide. She helps me with spirit crossover and all that kind of stuff. I've got an Egyptian guy. I've always loved Egypt and ancient Egypt and all that kind of stuff. He won't tell me his name. It's so strange, but he will tell me. He will help me with difficult spirits. I've also got my great-great-grandmother that comes through to help me. Her name is Alice. And going back through the family history, I actually met her through a series of meditations. She came through. And when I mentioned it to my parents later on, they did say, yeah, we've never told you about your great nan, Alice. And she was a tarot card reader. So I think it's been passed down from there. I've also got my granddad with me as well. He died when I was 4. He comes through and helps me as well. He stays very much in the background now and only comes through when I feel a little bit threatened or a little bit on edge. I'll see him and hear his voice. I've got a really tall Victorian gentleman, and I think that's related to what I used to see in my bedroom as a child. He's very much there for protection as well. His energy is very dark. And I usually work in a lot of light energy, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But his energy is very dark. He won't explain a lot to me, but I know he's got my back, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That if I need it, he's there. When I'm doing an investigation or something and something bad is about to happen, I will always see him. And then, believe it or not, in terms of spirit animals, I've got a big wolf. And that wolf I've seen ever since a small child. I thought it was a dog at first, but it's actually a wolf. And the strange thing was, I was doing an investigation, a public investigation, not so long ago, actually. And I was stood there and I was just doing some mediumship. And this woman had to go screaming out the room. And I went chasing after her and she was like, stay away from me, stay away from me. And I was like, what's wrong? She said, you've got a big dog that's next to you and I hate dogs. So she could see the wolf and she was extremely frightened of it. I had to sit her down and explain it's absolutely fine, it's not a problem. And she'd actually felt it brush past the legs. So in a nutshell, those are my guides. But I'll have other guides that come through. I have seen a guide that I can only describe as, you know, how Gandalf looks in Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. He looks very similar to that. It's not Gandalf by any shape, form or means, but it's that kind of druidy kind of look. And that's he's there when there's a lot of witchcraft around on the land. Mm-hmm. He comes in and deals with that. So, yeah, there's quite a few.
Are guides always the spirit of someone who walked the earth once?
No. I'd say half of my guides are. Some are what we call ascended masters or animal guides. So their energy is different to somebody that's lived on earth. They feel different, and there's no way I can describe how they feel different to you. Mm-hmm. It's like trying to tell you how the color red tastes like.
Sure.
But their energy feels different to me. I feel as though I need to be more respectful, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. With my guides that I know, I can laugh and joke and take the piss, if you like, out of them. Whereas other guys that come in, I'm like, okay, it's like having your school headmistress or headmaster walk in. Yeah, but different level of respect I need to give here. Yeah, it's a bit strange.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Andy. In part two, how does one become a guide once they reach the other side? Who was the little girl that haunts Andy's workplace? And when Andy realized that his children had the same gift that he has to communicate, how did he handle it? And how did his children handle it as well? Until next time, with The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.